We were rudely interrupted by that fire alarm, Peter, but...
I think it might have been because we were getting too hot in here.
Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 72. I'm Rob Wright with Cert Security, and I am here with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome back.
Hi, Rob.
Peter, we are... back in Chernobyl, in the podcast studio. It is Friday, September 15th, and it has been a week full of, and we expected this, but it's been a week full of Equifax breach news. And so we obviously did a big episode on this when the news initially broke last week, but we want to revisit it and update everyone on what's going on and also discuss some of the big questions about the new information that has come to light, because I think that there's a lot of big questions and there's a debate and a discussion that needs to be had, like not just between you and I here in Chernobyl, but I think industry-wide. For those that are maybe catching up on this, quick recap, Equifax, one of the big three credit bureaus, credit reporting agencies, last week disclosed that they had suffered a massive data breach. 143 million different individual consumers had been exposed in this breach. Names, addresses, birth dates, social security numbers, all exposed. We don't know. They're in the wild as of yet. There's been reports from different security companies that have been monitoring dark websites, hacker sites, that this data, some of this data is for sale.
Allegedly
for sale. And the breach response has really, and we spent a lot of time on this in the previous episode, the breach response, not good.
Not good.
A lot of mistakes. We want to turn the discussion now to sort of, I guess, the intrusion and Equifax's InfoSec posture and why this happened. There was a lot of speculation, Peter, last week and early this week that what caused the breach, what led to the breach was this, you know, and Apache Struts vulnerability. You know, vulnerability in the Apache Struts framework that was used, that is used within Equifax's infrastructure. And there was the speculation, basically, it was one report from Baird, I believe. An analyst had spoken to someone who said that a company representative said that this had to do with Apache Struts, but there was no other information.
They didn't say which Apache Struts vulnerability was either.
Yeah.
Because last week we also reported on an Apache Struts vulnerability.
A serious one, yes.
A zero day.
Yep.
But not the one that bit for Equifax.
No. So Equifax this week, they've issued a number of updates, but this week they, on the 13th, they came clean about why they were breached in the first place, and I want to read this. Quote, Equifax has been intensely investigating the scope of the intrusion with the assistance of a leading independent cybersecurity firm to determine what information was accessed and who has been impacted. We know, they're very definitive here, we know that criminals exploited a U.S. website application vulnerability. The vulnerability was Apache Struts CVE 2017-5638. We continue to work with law enforcement as part of our criminal investigation and have shared indicators of compromise with law enforcement. Now, so it was Apache Struts. But Peter, it was not a zero day. It was not any of the recent Apache Struts, you know, issues that we've seen. It was actually an issue from March.
Right, which is in some time frames recent, but
I guess that is recent.
But the patch came out the same day that the vulnerability was announced, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, it was March.
March 10th. I believe that's the date here. March 10th. The CVSS severity is 10. It's critical.
Wow.
It's a remote code execution flaw. I don't really need to go into the details. It's bad. So this was made public back in March. The intrusion happened in May. So it's about 2 months. So a lot of discussion about this has been, well, why didn't they patch? Why didn't Equifax patch? How were they allowed to? Okay. Peter, where do you stand on that?
Okay. So there's certain tropes around breaches that, and sometimes we're cautioned, like, don't victim blame. Equifax was a victim. Another one of those tropes is patching. Patching is not always so easy. And it's true. If you're an individual and you're running Windows or you're running iOS or any consumer OS, and you hear about a patch that's being available, in fact, you can set it up so it automatically loads, and it is easy.
Yeah.
If you're a big company and you're buying software from another big company, if you're Equifax and you've got Oracle software, and Oracle pushes out patches, there are mechanisms for that, and there's mechanisms for open source software as well. But one of the benefits of open source software is that it's free. And another one of the, so that means one of the disadvantages of open source software is if you're not paying for it, you got to take responsibility for some of these things. So yes, patching, especially in a big enterprise of complicated software, patching, if you just go and apply the patch, you may be in trouble because you break all of your other systems because there's something about the patch that causes you your custom installation or configurations to not work anymore. Mm-hmm. However, if you're Equifax, if you're doing $3 billion plus in revenue every year, of which $2 billion plus is gross profit, you could probably find a few dollars to scrape together and pay for someone to manage your cybersecurity. So while everybody's saying, yeah, don't victim blame and patching's not easy, gonna say, yeah, patching isn't easy, but it's not easy to put together all this data that you've collected from sources that have not given you consent.
Yeah.
And you're making money hand over fist with it, but you're not protecting it. And why aren't you protecting it? Because it doesn't really, well, up to now, for most companies, it hasn't really mattered for their long-term viability. And, like, now that I'm saying that, I realize maybe there are smaller companies that get completely destroyed by some of these things, but we haven't seen them yet. And Equifax, we haven't, we're very early in this.
We are.
I don't believe that May was is going to be the date, the time when the breach actually initiated. I think they're going to find that there was evidence of at least reconnaissance activity happening well in advance of that.
Yeah.
Nor do I think that it was only 143 million records consumers. I think that the a lot of experts are saying, just assume that you have been breached.
Yeah.
Because the breach notification system is not working either.
Right,
so
right.
It's safest to just say, yeah, you probably were breached if you're a consumer in the United States, or maybe even in the UK or Canada as well, because we're hearing reports about those people being more impacted than we previously thought.
I have a few thoughts. So to your point, when this happened and there was talk about the Apache Struts business, I said, okay. I'm a little, it seems a little weird to me that the company, Equifax, was adamant that their core databases had not been accessed. So the actual credit reports and the data there about what your actual credit rating and your financial history hadn't been obtained or manipulated. They were pretty sure of that. So I don't know what web applications they're using Apache Struts for or how widespread it is in their organization, but I just kind of, I sat back and I said, well, with what we know about phishing attacks and what we know about how valuable this personally identifiable information is, this personal data, PII, it wouldn't surprise me if the intrusion is actually traced back to a simple phishing attack, a spear phishing attack, where someone, got tricked into thinking it was a company executive, or it was IT, or it was an alert for their you know, application system that said, oh, click on this, you know, to verify your password, and boom, somebody got pwned, and that's how they got in. And that still may be the case. What troubles me, though, is that, and I mentioned this last week, but I want to reiterate this. If the core databases had not been accessed, well, how did they get 143 million records? Where was this data? Was it just sitting around in a bunch of files outside of those databases? And how? Was it encrypted? Was it not encrypted? Was it password protected? Was there any access control around these files? Or were they just floating out there in the ether? Because that matters. Like, that is going to be, they're going to have to answer for this. Like, that's an important detail here.
I'm with you on that. I think there's a lot, there's so many unanswered questions. I mean, even some of the most basic questions that we have about this, as you say, who is affected, what happened, what protections were in place, what security controls were in place, and we've got, you know, people in the Senate are demanding responses. I find it, I don't want to say unusual or odd, because it's not really, but I find it, I'm saddened by the fact that Equifax is not answering any questions. All they're doing, the only information we're getting from them directly is through their website, where every day or so, when something new comes up and some new outrage surfaces, we find, you know, they respond to it, or maybe as happened in the last couple of days when they finally admitted that it was due to the Struts vulnerability. The thing that does get my dander up, I have to say, is that I've noticed in the last 24 hours, at least two outlets, news outlets, and probably more, are framing the issue as Equifax and Apache Struts Foundation as being depicted as a software company.
And they're blaming each other.
And they're blaming each other. And the fact is that the Apache Struts Foundation did come out with a statement that basically said, we found this vulnerability March 10th, we patched it, we released the patch and announced it. And if you're running the software unpatched, it's your fault that you got pwned.
Yeah. That's where their responsibility ends. I mean,
well, yeah, they're, I mean, it's not just a software company, and this is
an organization. Yeah, it's not a company.
Right, but I mean, commercial software, this is decade. This is, like, I can remember 1983 being outraged by the fact that I had no legal recourse. If Microsoft's software did something to my data, I could sue them only for to recover the damages to the media that I bought. You know, liability in software is very limited, and it's like, it's longer than many of the people involved have been alive that's been the case.
Yeah.
So if Equifax starts standing up and saying, well, it's Apache Struts' fault, they're liable. Well, no, they're not, because not only isn't it commercial software, I mean, not only is liability in software limited, but it wasn't, you know, Equifax didn't, presumably, as far as we know, we don't know that they've contributed to the Apache Struts Foundation or any open source group, but they benefited from the using of the software for many years, as far as we've already discovered. So to have news reports coming out, it makes me wonder, is somebody trying to frame this in a way to make it look like Equifax is maybe not in 110% to blame here?
I don't know, but I'll tell you this. I thought it was unusual that there's no chance that Equifax just found out that vulnerability was what was exploited. They knew it. They knew it when they disclosed the breach last week. But right. For some reason, they decided to wait a week before disclosing the exact nature, because I'm sure they knew when they showed that CVE code, people were going to say, this is from March, and you weren't breached initially until May. So you had time to patch. And they didn't disclose that until you had members of Congress, state attorney generals, start to put pressure on them, to put heat on them. And this company has gotten a lot of heat over the last week.
Oh yeah.
Let's you know, oh, yeah, not mince words.
Yeah, no, they should be breaking out the asbestos underwear.
Yeah, this over is there. This is
because it's there's a lot of heat.
And so back to the point about the who's to blame here. So I asked this question over Twitter, and there was a tweet from Rich Mogul, Securosis analyst, who we've mentioned before. He's very, very bright individual who knows as much as anyone out there about AWS security. Really does a great job. Securosis does a great job in general. He had said, as it pertains to the blame game here, he tweeted that, you know, patching an enterprise, I'm quoting here, patching an enterprise framework within 2 months is far from easy in any legacy environment. And he's right. Okay, he's absolutely right. It's we can sit back and we can say, why didn't Equifax do this, that, or the other? Two months is actually not that long a period to go without a patch at a major enterprise. Is that the fire alarm?
That's a fire alarm. We should probably...
Is that the fire alarm?
Yeah.
And we're back. We were rudely interrupted by that fire alarm, Peter, but...
I think it might have been because we were getting too hot in here.
Probably not. It was probably another false alarm. We've had a lot of these in our office building. Yes. So as I was saying before, the 2 months is not that long to go like without patching a vulnerability of that nature. And I was reading something before we got on here. Ars Technica did a really good sort of description back when this vulnerability was disclosed in March about why these are so bad. It's not just the nature of the vulnerability. That Apache Struts framework, there's some heavy lifting involved to actually patch that, and then to make sure you've done it right, to push it out to all the affected web applications. The downloading and the recommissioning of the application. I mean, it's not easy. I recognize that, and so do you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. But at the same time, I mean, if you're a big business and this is part of this is mission critical for you, then you gotta make you gotta have some kind of framework for responding to that kind of a vulnerability.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, it's irresponsible.
It's definitely something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, going back to what Rich Mogul had said over Twitter. You know, you don't want to sit there and say, you guys suck if you can't patch in 2 months. But there are also, you know, he tweeted this. He said, you also need to say, you better have other layers to compensate if you can't patch. And that is the kicker here.
Mm-hmm.
Like this to me, it's all the obsessing over patches and when you patch and why didn't you patch. Okay, let's say it's 6 months goes by. Let's say a year goes by. The web app is still vulnerable. You can get, there's any number of organizations that use Apache Struts web applications, okay? Let's say somebody gets into an organization. Let's say somebody gets into Equifax. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they can access the data. They've entered the network. But if you have proper layers in place, hopefully you can detect the intrusion. Hopefully you can pick up indicators, you know, signs of compromise. You have some type of threat detection system in place. But more importantly, I go back to the data. Why were these data files even available? If they must have been outside the core database, because if they got into the core database, they would have said that, and they said they didn't. So where were these data files? Why weren't they being protected? And if this vulnerability is made public, the Apache Struts Foundation put this out on March 10th. They said this is bad. It's critical. It's a 10 out of 10. It's actively, and this is not, we didn't mention this the first time, it was actively being exploited. If you're an organization that uses this stuff and you know that you cannot patch in a timely manner, you need to move to plan B. Like, immediately, you need to lock down all your data. You need to add what other layers of security you think you need to protect your organization. You have to start planning for someone to exploit that web app, that flaw, and get into your organization, and then figure out where the crown jewels are and lock them down. And I don't know what steps they took. I don't know if they took any steps. I don't have any insight to this. I haven't seen their environment. I don't know how many web applications they were dealing with. I don't know what they were trying to patch. I don't know if there was some. There could have been something bigger that they were trying to patch. There could have been a Windows flaw that they said, "Oh well, we've got to take care of this first." Could be cyber weapons. I mean, we've written a lot about cyber weapons recently, Peter.
Oh yeah, those cyber pathogens too. The dormant cyber pathogens, if I remember correctly. But okay, all kidding aside, I wonder what would have happened if. On March 10th, when the person who was responsible at Equifax found out about this, if they had just turned around and said, "We must turn off everything, shut it down, we'll take a hit for a week or so," would that have been better for them?
Listen, is going to happen one of these days. Some CEO, some CIO, some executive management team somewhere is going to find themselves in a position like that. And they're going to say, do I want to put my job on the line by keeping operations up and running, nothing to see here, and hope that I don't get sacked, or hope that the company doesn't get pwned and I get sacked? Or do I do the right thing? The right thing, I guess that's subjective. Or do I make the bold decision to stop everything, stop the presses, and say, we're shutting things down. We're going to do a full review. We're turning off all the web apps. We're shutting the ports, batten down the hatches. We're going to figure out how to lock things down. And if we can't patch this stuff, we're taking the systems offline.
And that's a huge risk too.
An enormous risk, because what would happen? What would happen if a public company like that, when it comes earnings time, and you have, you know, you have to explain 2 weeks of downtime. And how do you prove a negative? Like, how do you prove that what you did there prevented you from being hacked? Like, how do you prove that? You can't unless you caught an intruder in the act of doing it and you said, look, this is what happened. But that's hard. So then you have to answer to shareholders. I don't know. That's risky too.
Well, okay. So I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier in the, you know, before the fire alarm, but in 1 week they've lost a third of their market value, share value, right? I think, you know, to be optimistic, as you like to call me,
you are.
There are benefits from this whole episode so far, in that the next time a big company like this finds out that they're in that position, I think the argument in favor of shutting down, you know, stopping the presses.
Yeah.
I mean, and whenever I hear that now, at one point somebody explained to me what that means. It means that when you slam on that button to stop the presses, it just costs you huge amounts of money because all of the machinery is jammed to a shut.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can't help but think of that as being a destructive thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or slamming to a halt. But there's now that argument is possible to be made, and hopefully Equifax will get the full consequences of this. And the other credit bureaus are apparently now all three of them, of the majors, it's being reported that they're not being able to keep up with the demand to freeze accounts. Mm-hmm. That people are being told to send letters because there's just so much of it going on.
Again, that goes back to the response.
Exactly. Right.
It hasn't been great, and they had 2 months to sort of sit down and really figure out how they wanted to. Or 2 months. Not 2 months. It was July 29th they detected the breach.
Well, they had all of August.
It's about 6 weeks. I mean,
I'm hoping that some vacations were ruined.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be mean, but.
Right. You hope that they're putting in the time and the overtime, the necessary man hours, work hours to fix what is not only going on with the breach itself and their information security posture, but also the response. If you can't keep up with the demand, I mean,
don't think they did.
Yeah, then you're not prepared. Right. You weren't prepared for this to happen on a number of levels. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. I mean, I know I said this in the office the other day. If I was this organization, if you're any organization at this scale and you have these types of data sets that is your lifeblood, that's what you do, and you know they're a target for hackers, well, then why are you in the infrastructure business anyways? Like, why are you messing around with Apache Struts? No disrespect to the foundation, but if you're using legacy systems and you're using all of these legacy apps and web apps, and you're going to be subjected to repeated vulnerabilities, you know this, so stop. Move to the cloud. You know, not to give a boost to our cloud provider friends here, but just get out of that. Make it someone else's problem. And don't expose it over AWS S3 buckets.
Yeah, hire somebody who knows how to configure a bucket.
Exactly.
So that it won't be exposed to the entire internet.
Oh, my God.
So I started making a list.
Things. You had some closing thoughts here with the list. Yeah.
So, I mean, we can take turns with – you probably have a list as well. But one thing that came in before we started the podcast this morning – the Komodo Threat Intelligence Lab notified me by email that they put up a blog post.
Yeah,
what did they do? They undertook a dark web analysis mm-hmm. on Equifax, and they discovered more than 388 records of Equifax user and employee endpoint data available for sale. And I'm quoting here: this data includes username, title, password, and login URL. Plus the dates on which they were obtained. We found Equifax users' credentials were stolen via zero-day pony exploits. Pony's a Russian password stealer kit. Anyway, long story short, apparently not very good password hygiene or practice on the part of people like the CIO, the chief privacy officer, the VP of PR, VP of sales. All use lowercase letters, no special symbols, easily guessed words like spouses' names, city names, and even combinations of initials and birth year. So that's I'm going to just start off. If you have a thing that you want to call out, a practice or event or something that happened with Equifax that's been uncovered in the last week,
yeah.
If not, I've got three or four more.
So. Go.
Okay.
Fire them off quick.
KPMG audits on Equifax business practices were left unsecured on websites. There was in Argentina.
I read this. Were, yeah.
Yes. Admin.
Yeah.
Access
to their portal.
Data. Yeah. Right.
I mean, admin.
Right.
Come on, guys.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, sorry, this is my last one.
Yeah, go.
UK.
How
many people in the UK were affected? Was it a small number? Was it 44 million?
It just keeps growing.
We don't know. Canada is also being left in the dark on this.
This is so unfair to them.
This is so unfair. Right.
This is why we have Privacy Shield and GDPR and all this stuff.
Right.
It is.
I mean, they don't even have social security numbers.
Oh.
So anyway. And every time I go on Twitter, there's something else that pops up.
Well, here, as we close this out, given all that we know about what's, you know, sort of the trickling out of worse and worse news about the situation, do you want to take a bet? Do you want to place odds on whether or not their core database really was untouched? Because I worry about that now, and I if I were them, I would be focusing the majority of my investigation. I'm sure they probably are, but on whether or not that was untouched, and what do we need to do to make it even more secure? Because this is just, man.
Okay, I'm not taking the side that says that the core database was untouched. In fact, I will take the side that says almost everything that we found out in the first week, which is everything that we found out so far, that Equifax has told us about this, which is not that much, but I'm going to say that everything is going to either be wrong or worse.
Yeah.
Just because that's, I mean, I think back to OPM, all the other big ones.
I think you're coming around to the dark side. I like this. You're a pessimist. You know.
Well, but I did find a bright spot. Yeah. That it's a good, a bad, everything serves as an example. Yeah. And some just as a bad example. But that's something. Good
point. Well, we should wrap up here because if we keep talking about this, we'll be in here all day, and Lord knows there's enough material to do so. But
well, I think the fire alarm will probably go
off. Yeah, the fire alarm will come back on again.
Yeah.
But Peter, thank you for joining me for another spirited discussion about the Equifax breach.
Always glad to be here.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.